Well, tonight, we are honored to have a very special guest with us to give a challenge to our graduates. He is one of our own. As a young man, he grew up in Edgemont Bible Church, had the opportunity to visit Calvary Bible College, and the Lord called him to Calvary, and he worked in the ministry, serving as a pastor in different churches. He went back to Calvary Bible College and is now serving as the president of Calvary Bible College and Theological Seminary. So if you would please welcome tonight Dr. James Clark.
Thank you. Well, it's certainly a privilege and a joy to be here this evening. And my first words are congratulations to you as graduating class of 2012. This is a great moment in your life, and God has been faithful. To Pastor White, Mr. Root, and this church family, the parents, it has to be a special time for you as well, and for the school and the staff as also. Now, you have said that you have accomplished a lot, and it's been hard work. So, since I'm in education and you went to a Christian school, I thought it'd be appropriate that we would give them one final quiz. So, if you pass this, then you're going to do well in Bible when you go to college and all of that. So the first question I have for you is, what kind of man was Boaz before he married Ruth? Well, everybody knows the answer to that. Ruthless. Okay, we'll go to the next one. What do they call pastors in Germany? German shepherds. Who was the greatest financier in the Bible? Noah. He was floating his stock while everyone else was in liquidation. Yeah, maybe you know this one. What kind of motor vehicles are found in the Bible? Bright group. Just really responsive here with these. Well, let's probably a Honda, right? Because the apostles were all in one accord. Who was the greatest comedian in the Bible? Samson. He brought the house down. Well, which Bible character had no parents? Huh? Ah, I don't know his name, but you're right. Joshua, son of Nun. Yeah. Why didn't they play cards on the ark? Because Noah was standing on the deck. Do you know why? Do you know that it's a sin for women to make coffee? It's in the Bible. It said Hebrews. Yeah. So, those are moaners and groaners, I tell you. I would like to share with you for a few moments some things that God's put in my heart. It seems that as I listen to you share your testimonies here, that God has been gracious to you. I heard Christian homes, families, a church, a Christian school. You've been surrounded by the best God can offer. You realize that? So don't waste it. Don't waste what God has given to you. There's been said that those who start well don't always end well. Some have great potential, they have great talent, they have great skills, they have great abilities. And you think, now, if anyone is going to make it, that person will. And yet, we recognize that many of those people, something went awry in their life and they did not fulfill all of those hopes and aspirations. I'll never forget when I was first week in college, Calvary Bible College, and Dr. Ken Gangel spoke to all of the freshman class. He looked at us and he said, statistics tell us that 2/3 of you will not make it to your senior year. And you will not graduate. That was stunning to me. To realize that I am starting college and yet as I looked around in the class of freshmen, that he's saying that 2/3 of this class will not make it, will not finish. That put the fear of God in me. That frightened me. That scared me. Will I be one of the 2/3 that won't do it? It's a possibility. I have two questions for you tonight. The first question is, why do some not finish well or not finish at all? And the second question is, how will you finish? The first one, it's quite obvious that many things contribute to failure. There's been missed opportunities in people's lives and things that's happened to them that they never anticipated. Disappointments, disillusionment, setbacks, drawbacks, failures. Life can really dish it out. And those who thought that they were going to be very successful ended up to be very disappointed. Their dreams shattered. Their hopes were lost. Some of them were involved with the wrong friends. They got involved in sin. And the list goes on. Why is it that people don't finish well or don't finish at all? The Apostle Paul said, fight the good fight, holding on to the faith and a good conscience. And some have rejected these and so have shipwrecked their faith. I stood here 5 years ago speaking to that class. 5 years ago. I don't know where those graduates are today. My hope and prayer is that they are successful. But we don't know. As I look at you young people, I say, my, you're fine looking young people. If anybody's going to make it, you're going to make it. But we don't know. An expression that Jesus used often in his early ministry, especially when he was choosing his disciples. It was simply two words. He would say, follow me. Follow me. And one by one, they left their various trades and their occupations, their aspirations and future plans. They left it all and they followed him. They responded to those simple words, follow me, and said, we will follow him. Crowds of people followed Jesus. Peter and his brother Andrew says that at once they left their nets, they followed him. You talk about zoned in, talk about focused. It's simply putting everything aside and following that man. Large crowds from Galilee, Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, Jordan. The Bible says they all followed him. The sick, the blind, the social outcasts, the tax collectors, they all followed him. Blind Bartimaeus said, and immediately he received his sight and he followed Jesus. I don't know what you're going to follow when you leave here. But most importantly, follow him. The motivations for some of those people who follow Jesus are different. I've observed it over the years. Some follow Jesus out of a need. The need of a physical need. Maybe emotional or moral need in their life. Or just an identity. That I belong to someone. I'm attached to someone. I have something in my life that I can say that's what I'm about. It becomes a need. And so they follow Jesus. Others follow Jesus out of gratitude. They were touched. They were healed. They were rescued. They were changed. And out of gratitude, it's like, look what he's done to me. I'm going to follow him. Others would follow out of hope. Hope that my life will be better as I follow him. Hope that he will perhaps change the government for the good of our people. A new kingdom, justice, maybe power. So the hope that people have for a better life. All of this is good. These are good motives. It's good for us out of need to follow Jesus or out of gratitude to follow him, out of hope. Those are good motivating factors in life. But why do you follow him? There's probably other motives as well. But then I want to tell you that there's an interesting twist to all of this. Those who wanted to follow him were told something by Jesus. He said, consider it and give it thought before you follow me. Consider it and give it thought. And the twist is that even though it seemed like people just dropped things and followed him, in wanting them to follow, it almost seemed like he didn't want them to follow because he said, I want you to consider this before you follow me. A man who's going to build his house, he better first stop and count the cost. He better recognize what it means to build the house. So if you're going to follow me, you better consider the cost. I submit to you that Jesus wants more than lip service. Or followers who have skewed their motives. And he's asking for radical commitment. For dedication and radical service. He is saying that he wants you to be sold out to Jesus. If you're going to follow him. He's looking for those who will count the cost. Literally discourages those who don't. The rich young ruler comes to Jesus and he had a need. He had motives and he saw that with this man, he's popular. I mean, look at all the people that follow him. I want to be a part of the in group. I want to be identified with this man who is truly turning heads. And Jesus turned and looked at him and said, sell all you have, and then come follow me. And at that, the rich young ruler turned and quietly walked away. Too great of a cost. It took too much in my life to get where I am right now. And you're telling me to get rid of all of it to follow you. Oh, no. I can't do it. Do not follow on false pretenses or emotional highs. He's looking for those who understands that it involves sacrifice and commitment. To turn your future plans over to him and say, I will follow you. plans of what college or career or relationships, what bank account. For some, it means to follow him to the mission field, to full-time Christian service, a nurse. He's looking for those who recognize following him involves a cross. No one can follow Jesus and do whatever he likes. No one can follow Jesus and follow his own pleasures. A cross is an act of surrender. And surrender is never easy. So the second question. How will you finish? Paul said in Galatians, you did run well. Who did hinder you that you should not obey the truth? So Paul is writing to these that had started good. They had a great start. But something in life hindered them. And it kept them from really obeying the truth. Peter said in 2 Peter 2:21, for it had been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than after have known it to turn from the holy commandment delivered unto them. That's strong words. Paul said, I fought a good fight. I finished my course. I've kept the faith. John 12:26, if any man serve me, let him follow me. And where I am, there also my servant will be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. So the accolades that come from our friends and our parents, well and good. But how will you finish? The greatest honor is from the Heavenly Father that says, well done, thy good and faithful servant. Well, there's an interesting situation that happened in the Olympics in 1968. Let me share this in closing. In Mexico City, the world's elite runners ran one of history's most grueling marathons. Because of the high altitudes that are hard to walk in, not to mention run in, many disheartened world-class athletes quit the race. More than an hour after the gold medal winner had been crowned, the last spectators trickled out of the Olympic Stadium. As the lights were turned out, a lone Tanzanian runner entered the Colosseum. As he plodded into view, people began to laugh. Laughter turned to silence as the exhausted runner, legs wobbling, right knee wrapped in a new dangling bandage and feet bleeding, slowly moved across the last 400 meters of his race. The stadium lights flashed as he looked and took the slow, painful strides to the end. The crowd that mocked him a few minutes earlier now cheered him on. Others, seeing even deeper into the man's spirit, began to cry. Years later, sports journalist Bud Greenspan asked this former Olympian, who had become a coach, why he continued to run the race hours after it became clear that he had no chance for a medal. The graying coach replied, I came from a small, poor country, and many people made sacrifices for me to go to Mexico City to run in the marathon. They didn't send me to start the race. They sent me to finish the race. To the class of 2012, give it thought. Follow him and finish well.